Welcome to the 12-Step Recovery Evolution podcast. Visit recoveryevolution.co.uk for more episodes, helpful resources, and links to our social media. Also visit the site for information on how you can attend a future Zoom session or workshop live. Thank you. Right, so I got a call from Lester yesterday, about six, and he said, would you do the Creative Amends talk? And I said, that would be an honour. Immediately went into self, wrote pages and pages of notes. And I was thinking, why am I so anxious? And the fact, I guess there's a little disclaimer here, I didn't go through the treatment centre, so I haven't gone through that intensive process that you guys went to. I kind of had to white knuckle it in AA. And that's not dismissing what they did, because it's a direct result of a good sponsor, the 12 steps and a spiritual awakening, that I'm sober today. That's the great fact of that. But it is a different process. And I think the reason I was mostly anxious is because you don't really get much of an opportunity to talk this intensive in an AA room. People will shut you down. They'll show you a yellow card, red card. People that are on a program will be nodding away. People that aren't practicing the program and don't want to do the program will be rolling their eyes. I call it a Mexican eye roll when you say something about the program, and then they all start tutting and effing and blinding, and I've actually experienced that. So I've never, never done this, but I've spoken to a group of people about the amends process. I've done it many, many times with my sponsor and the sponsees. When I take people through the steps, when we go, you know, do our daily call and our inventory calls, but I've never done this, so I'm kind of winging it a bit, if I'm honest with you. So it was when I started to write it down, I realised, God, I've never really talked about this stuff before, in this sort of setting. So hang in there, and I might sort of double back on myself a little bit and try and explain bits as it crops up. I have taken sort of written down some notes, and I'm going to stick to sort of the big book in as much that it says our stories disclose in a general way what we were like, what happened, and what we're like now. I'm going to try and stick to that theme. I don't need to go into drinking stories. I can tell you that I started drinking alcoholically in my early 20s and drank for 20 years, and the last sort of 3 to 4 years were I tipped over into that chronic alcoholism, drinking to oblivion. And that is a story for another day, but I don't think there's much value in talk. I guess it's useful if it helps you identify with what I'm saying. I drank to oblivion and I nearly killed myself. You know, that's the great fact of that. So that last 5 years, I guess, what I've also known or come to understand about alcoholism in my life is it's the repeating of behaviours, because I didn't know any better. So for me, that meant sort of building a life, building, you know, getting married, having kids, because that's what I thought would make me happy, and not feeling very happy, feeling very dissatisfied, very disappointed with, not with the people necessarily, but with the situation, feeling hopeless, feeling like, is this the end? Discontent and irritable, and then tearing it down and just tearing it all down. And then, because I couldn't cope with myself, I would relocate. And I mean, I don't mean just the next village. I'd be 30, 40 miles away and try and reinvent that life again. And it's a direct result of that constant reinvention. I say constant, 4 times realistically, but I do mean trying to restart my life in another town. So I started in a little village, went to Oxford, went from Oxford to London, London back to Oxford, Oxford to Great Yarmouth, and each time I left a trail of destruction. Is quite a powerful word, but certainly I left a trail of disappointment, I guess. People had invested in me. I don't mean money. They'd invested in their plans with me and life with me. They built careers based on the fact I owned a business. So there were employees that would come and work for me and have a long-term plan. But the fact is, it just couldn't last because I couldn't cope. I didn't have a coping mechanism. So I drank. I drank because I couldn't cope with my feelings, myself, and situations, all feelings and situations. So as a result of that, I've got two ex-wives. I've got kids with both that I don't or didn't see that. I shouldn't say I don't. I didn't really have much of a relationship with. I was kind of the Disney dad. Take them out for a fun weekend, drop them back at mum, piss off for another 4 weeks, and then go back sort of 4 weeks later and do the process all over again. And that's how that ended. But the last one was here in Great Yarmouth. I came to Great Yarmouth, reinvented myself, moved my business, got myself 12 staff, started all of that stuff, found a girl I liked, really liked. So thought, well, yeah, I could just do it all over again. But this time it'll be different. And it'll be different because I've got more money this time. I've sold a business and done really well out of that. But the fact of it is I ended up, it was a 2 to 3 year relationship and a lovely child out of it. But I'd run out of places to run. Something was a bit different. I couldn't face driving 300-400 miles on a Friday to pick up my lad to take him back to mine and then driving back on the Sunday, which I'd done all through my first lad's youth. I was doing sort of 1,000 miles a week just so I could go and have him for the weekend because that was the right thing to do. I couldn't do that again. So I sort of made the conscious decision to stick around and try and be a part of that. But this is all still within, rancid alcoholism. Going to primary school and hoping that they couldn't see that I was pissed out of my skull, picking him up, trying to pretend normal, standing back from everybody. That's not normal behaviour. So eventually found myself broken enough to go into an AA room for the second time with a different attitude. It was a direct result of finding myself on my hands and knees and saying, God help me. And when I reviewed all the things I'd tried in that sort of 3 to 4 years of being alone and drinking myself to death, really it was the 12-step AA program was the only one that made sense. Not knocking all of the other, the agencies, they do phenomenal work. I don't think they're necessarily equipped for a chronic alcoholic who's on a path to self-destruction. Managing my drink with a drink diary in a special beaker that's got little measures on it, I was beyond that. But it was the best they had. But there was something about what the people in AA said that made sense. I didn't like them. I didn't like the people in AA, but the fact is I didn't really like anybody. Didn't like myself, so there was no chance I was going to like other people. I was angry. I was very lonely, very angry. And the way out for me was to kill myself, but that didn't happen, so I went to AA. I was blessed because I met a chap on my first sort of meeting going back, we talked differently. And you may have heard of it, it's referred to as primary purpose. And I guess in a nutshell, what that did is it freed me from sitting around in coffee meetings. I can't be doing that. I can't hear another story about a broken microwave or a windy caravan or a husband that's not nice. I was beyond all that. I kind of need to get over this or I'm going to kill myself. Can't do it. But my plan, I went back to AA. If this don't work, I'm going to chuck myself off the bridge. I'm going to do it. And so I got in with them. Now, they can be a little bit, I get direct, very loving, constantly loving to me. And it was a beacon for me. It was kind of I don't have to do all that stuff. Because you've got to bear in mind, I'm so disappointed with life. I fucking hate people. I really cannot cope with relationships. Everything about me tells me I cannot do relationships up to that point. So these guys were very much, well, this is what we do, but you can do what you like. And I kind of like that approach. They left it for me. They sort of empowered me to make that decision. Rather than some of the meetings where I'd get, you mustn't do this, you mustn't do that, don't have a girlfriend for a year, don't do this. And it's just like a big list of shit I'm not allowed to do. And it's like, well, that's fine, but tell me what I got to do. They just spent a lot of time telling me what I wasn't to do, not what I should do. Whereas the primary purpose said, this is what we do. And it involved quite an intensive process of studying the big book, which I found really valuable. It created discipline in my life. There was a requirement that I phone the sponsor every day at the same time. And I needed that discipline. I was self-employed running the show. I needed somebody to say, you got to phone me. I remember missing phoning him once. And I phoned him the next day. And I said, oh, hello. And he said, who's that? I said, it's Fox. He said, Fox who? I was crushed because I'd missed a day. I thought, you bastard. But that's the approach I needed. I'm not saying that's the right for everybody. I really am not saying that. But for this belligerent, defiant, self-reliant, self-willed, alcoholic, angry alcoholic, I needed that sort of discipline, that boundary. So I went through the 12 steps over a weekend because that was possible. I'd done all the intensive work and then sat there with my sponsor in his lounge and did that over a weekend. And I remember leaving, and that was very revealing. It was quite remarkable. I might have to come back to some of that. I remember leaving, as I was walking down his drive, he said a couple of things to me. The first was, you've made a good beginning. That's all you've done. You've made a good beginning. That's not to dismiss what we've done, but, you know, I come out of there with my big folder, my big book, my list of amends and thought, nailed it. No, you've just started. You've just drunk a lot of coffee and read a book. So, all right. But the second one, he said, don't hang around with those amends. Do not hang around with the amends. So I made that decision that night. And this, again, not a recommendation, but this is just how it worked for me. It felt right that I would take the time off work the next, however long it was needed, because it was a Sunday. I'd not go to work Monday and I would go and make those amends. And as I think God was operating in my life, because it just made sense in terms of going and making those amends to go back to the beginning. So I went back to the village that I sort of was born and grew up in. And I had a few to do there, you know, breaking into neighbors' houses and stealing a few pence off the ironing board and little things like that. But believe me, as I sort of moved to the other locations to make my way back to Norfolk, they got a bit more bigger, you know, but they got a lot bigger, you know, the amends I was making. But the process was, I was supported. I remember being terrified, sitting outside people's houses, and I phoned the sponsor, and he was just on standby. It was wonderful, and I said, I'm frightened. And he said, of course you are. Go do it. And I would go and do this, and then I'd get back in the car and go, oh, I did it, and it was all right, etc. And I did that with all of them. And I was away for 3 days doing that because there was a lot of people, and I sort of started, as I say, in Oxfordshire, made my way up through London, and it just felt right that if I'm going to build and stay here in Norfolk, Suffolk, that they were the people I was going to have the relationships with. And maybe subconsciously, I was kind of practicing on the people that I didn't really have long-term relationships with. Some of them didn't even remember me, which was a bit nuts, but there you go. It just felt right to do it that way. I'm not saying you have to organize it. We've got to be willing to make those amends, you know, as soon as we're able. And it might not be that you're in a position to do it geographically, but it felt right for me. So I think it's worth going back to that primary purpose process, because that was perfect for that belligerent, defiant person, angry person like me. And one of the things that they gave us, and this isn't a recommendation, but I was given two bits of paper. One was what I say to the people I am just making amends to from my past. I've not got a long-term relationship. I say this, and then I do what I've got to do. I make the amends. I make reparation. I try to restore what I've torn down to the best of my ability. And I might sort of go back to some of that. But I guess actually I can sum that up in, if I owed money, I had to give them the money back and more. You know, that was a lot of it to do with money, to be honest with you. But not all of that. You know, I robbed people of their peace of mind. I robbed people of love. I robbed people of their plans. I robbed people of their security. So I had to figure out how to make amends to those people. But there I am with this bit of paper for them. And then you got another piece of paper, which is got slightly different wording. And that was designed for the people that I want to maintain relationships with. Now, here's the fact that I know 8 years down the line. That was perfectly ideal for somebody who literally the day before had their sponsor say, go and make your amends, don't hang around. But I have learned that as we grow, as I grew, as more was revealed to me by practicing the 12 steps, by going on workshops, by reading material and listening to awesome podcasts, I learned that actually those bits of paper aren't really enough. They're a really good beginning. Brilliant. You know, I didn't know what to say to people, didn't have a clue. Perfect for somebody who didn't remember, I didn't want relationships. I wasn't capable of them. I was just so disappointed with them. I just need to do this because I don't want to drink again. So my bits of paper were enough to get me to the next step. And the next step didn't arrive for a few months, if I'm honest with you. But I'm not knocking that. But if that's all that's required when you're 8 years down the line, those bits of paper, then you simply cannot be an alcoholic of my type. One that practices this 12-step program, loves God, has a relationship with God, takes guidance from God, good sponsors, good fellowship, and learns and willing to be told the truth in a kind and loving way and act on that. So they were brilliant bits of paper and they got me far. But I've learned that there's more to it than that. And I guess with the creative amends, the thing about the creative amends is I have to do those to maintain relationships despite not being very good at them or at that time wanting them, not being able to cope with them. So because I couldn't cope with relationships, my solution is don't have one. And I'm not just talking about boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife. I'm talking about all relationships. Relationships with my clients, with my staff, with my employees. So the creative amends, if we sort of look at the definition, I did look it up because I just think it's useful because I do love the dictionary. It's my third favorite book after the Bible, the big book, a dictionary, because I can think myself a bit clever and think I understand what a word means. But it talks about rebuilding, about restoring. It's got nothing to do with sorry, although that's kind of a part of it. It's not about running around saying sorry. It can't be that. I spent my life running around saying sorry about that, oops, all that sort of stuff. It's not that. So I hear that quite a lot in the rooms, but that's from people that don't sort of necessarily practice the program in the way that I found I have to. So the creative amends is for me, it's for the people I need to maintain relationships with. And of course, the primary one is the mother or the mothers of my two kids. And that's, they were a really good training ground, I found, because basically they by definition were completely and utterly failed relationships. They were just entirely failed. So to go back with these individuals, to go back to these people with a sort of a different approach, some of the stuff I did to them can't be fixed with money. It cannot be fixed with money. I'm talking to somebody today about the process of making amends. And I really do have to just trust the process. I'm not allowed to manipulate the outcome. My oldest lad, he was 19 when I made the amends to him. And I didn't know I didn't know any other way than to just do what I'd always done, which was buy him a new motorbike, buy him an Xbox, pay off his credit card. That was my definition of a creative amends. I felt so guilty that all I had was money. That was all I was able to do. I didn't have a lot of it, but I had enough that I could make these grandiose gestures and think, well, that's me making amends. But that's the sort of stuff I should have been doing anyway, you know, contributing to him needing a motorbike. That's the stuff as a dad, that's it. So I wasn't really making amends to him. And I learned over time, through good fellowship, through good sponsorship, you know, my sponsor, I learned over time that one of the most valuable things I have, in fact, the most valuable really, is my time. And when I looked at my time, I didn't have enough of it. I was spending my time all over the place, doing things that made me happy, doing things that made my life convenient. I never stepped out of my comfort zone with my time. If I was too busy for you. So I had to look into sort of time management and make changes there, and not just at first with my eldest, it was making time to receive his call. If he phoned me, I would stop and I would listen to him. But then it sort of moved on a bit like the paper's not enough at the it's enough at the beginning, and taking his calls and giving him time's enough. But then now I've kind of got to make time. I've got to make the call. I've got to be the one that's disappointed that he didn't pick up because I'm busy. And that's life. And then I've got to try again. My time is the most precious thing I have because I haven't got a lot of it. So the creative amends is for me, it's for the people I need to maintain relationships with. And of course, the primary one is the mother or the mothers of my two kids. And that's, they were a really good training ground, I found, because basically they by definition were completely and utterly failed relationships. They were just entirely failed. So to go back with these individuals, to go back to these people with a sort of a different approach, some of the stuff I did to them can't be fixed with money. It cannot be fixed with money. I was talking to somebody today about the process of making amends. And I really do have to just trust the process. I'm not allowed to manipulate the outcome. My oldest lad, he was 19 when I made the amends to him. And I didn't know any other way than to just do what I'd always done, which was buy him a new motorbike, buy him an Xbox, pay off his credit card. That was my definition of a creative amends. I felt so guilty that all I had was money. That was all I was able to do. I didn't have a lot of it, but I had enough that I could make these grandiose gestures and think, well, that's me making amends. But that's the sort of stuff I should have been doing anyway, contributing to him needing a motorbike. That's the stuff as a dad, that's it. So I wasn't really making amends to him. And I learned over time, through good fellowship, through good sponsorship, my sponsor, I learned over time that one of the most valuable things I have, in fact, the most valuable really, is my time. And when I looked at my time, I didn't have enough of it. I was spending my time all over the place, doing things that made me happy, doing things that made my life convenient. I never stepped out of my comfort zone with my time. If I was too busy, I was too busy for you. So I had to look into sort of time management and make changes there, and not just at first with my eldest, it was making time to receive his call. If he phoned me, I would stop and I would listen to him. But then it sort of moved on a bit like the paper's not enough at the it's enough at the beginning, and taking his calls and giving him time's enough. But then now I've kind of got to make time. I've got to make the call. I've got to be the one that's disappointed that he didn't pick up because I'm busy. And that's life. And then I've got to try again. My time is the most precious thing I have because I haven't got a lot of it. Maybe 30 odd years, and I'm not very good at managing it, but I'm working on it. So, and there was, the support locally. I've got a younger son who's got, a great mum. And I don't impose myself on them. I kind of just hold out the hand and let them know I'm here for them. And that's taken some while to foster that. I'm reliable today. I'll take a call. I'll be helpful. Yes, of course I can have him because you need to do that. I get to be this is amazing. I get to be quite a calming measure in both their chaotic lives. I'm a bit of a mediator. I'm a referee, and I can do it all with love without an ulterior motive. I guess the thing I have to keep in check when it comes to my creative amends or that ongoing process of maintaining those relationships is I mustn't try to manipulate the outcome. I've got to abandon the outcome to the process that has often been talked about in these podcasts. It's all very well me thinking, well, wouldn't it be great if this is what happened? But that's not for me to decide. That's for God to decide. That's for my higher power. I've kind of got to step out of the way and trust that stuff. So, and I'm doing that. And I'm going to be really honest with you. I had a conversation yesterday where a bit of a review of how I'm getting on with my employer. And I walked away with like 12 pages of notes of improvements that I can make. So this is currently an ongoing process. Now, I talked a little bit about earlier, but I've got to go back to this, that amends to ourselves. I'm not very good at that. And the reason I'm not very good at that is because I don't really have a very good relationship with me. It's improving, but it's not, I'm scratching the surface with me. It's much easier, I find, to talk with you, help you, chat with you, provide counsel to people, than it is to actually look inside at my own stuff. But you can't get away with that when you've got the fellowship that I'm in at the moment. You know, that's not enough. That gets, Lester often talks about, you know, shining the light on the darkness. You walk within sort of 10 or 15 feet of some of my colleagues, they shine a light. They do. They can't not shine a light on some stuff that's uncomfortable in me. Here's the miracle. Don't run away from that today. But by the grace of God and that relationship I have with the higher power, I'm sticking with it. I'm not moving. I'm not going to do what I would normally do when it gets uncomfortable. Close everything down, power everything off, fill up the car and move. That's amazing. So I'm in new territory today. I'm facing what it is I've got to, I don't really know all the things I've got to do, but I'm learning and I'm willing to learn. That's the amends that I'm making to myself. I do take people through the steps, and it's always a bit of an alarm bell when you look at their list of amends and the first four pages are me, 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 me. I'm not suggesting that we shouldn't be on that list somewhere. I just don't think, from my experience, we should be first. Now, that, and other people, when this is over, you're going to get a chance to share back. And please do share your experience of why somebody might need to put themselves first, because I'm sure there are cases, but not for me. There wasn't any for me. And I remember it was about 18 months in, phoning my sponsor and saying, oh God, I think I'm ready to make amends to myself. I'd kind of done my list. But I wasn't on my list, but I was just walking down through Alton Broad back to my office and I said, I think I'm ready to do amends to me. I said, but I don't know how to do that. Why didn't that occur to me before now? And he said, because you practice the program. It's a selfless program. You can't put you before others. That's not bigging me up. That's just the way it transpired. So 18 months later, it is a bit of an irony. I don't really know. I wasn't equipped, remember. This was 18 months in. I wasn't equipped to have a relationship with me. So I did revert to the bit of paper. And I can remember taking this in the office. I had the big tall mirror. I took it off, propped it down in front of the, you know, down on the floor, leant up against the wall. And I sat in front of this mirror and I wrote this stuff down. And it just seemed appropriate. And it just seemed appropriate because of the way I'd lived my life. I could kind of put it in little phases. I had the young person, the boy, you know, up to my sort of really the suicide of my mum, really, because that was sort of one phase. Then I had the second phase of chaos, which was up until my sort of early 30s, mid 30s. And then I had my 30s to my 40s, which was just alcoholism. So I had these three lists. And I sat in front of the mirror, and I didn't know any other way to do it, but I sat there with a bit of paper that was for people I wanted a relationship with, and I made amends to myself in that mirror. But I did it to the boy. And I can remember, and at the end, I just remember saying to the reflection, I'm saying, but it's okay now. We've got God in our lives. So we're going to be all right. And it was really powerful. It's like, it just felt right. We're going to be all right. I could tell that young lad, that, you know, from that past, that we're going to be all right. We've got God in our lives. And I'm sorry for this and that, etc. Then I did the same again with that 30-year, you know, that middle phase, that middle-aged chap. And then I did the one to the alcoholic. And I don't know how you do a creative amends to yourself, you know, bearing in mind all of my experience in terms of, you know, all I was equipped with was being able to chuck money at stuff, thinking that'll make it better. So it didn't feel that I didn't go off and buy myself stuff, But if you listen to a podcast from a couple of days ago, it might be the last episode or the one before, where Jeff talked in depth about that relationship with yourself. I found that very profound. I found it really profound. And a lot of my sort of amends process is a work in progress to me. And I do that by trying to eat well, by doing all the things that Jeff talked about, but taking this seriously. The biggest thing I find myself, I've learned over the last week, the one that keeps ringing in my ears is commit to it. Commit to it. Commit to improving your unmanageability. Commit to, I'm not you, I'm my unmanageability. Commit to my being a little bit disorganized. Commit to being kind. Commit to the recovery process. Commit to being willing to make amends when I'm wrong. Promptly admit it. Phone my sponsor. It's kind of a choice. I think it's a choice. I think this 12-step program is a choice. I can choose to do it or I can choose not to do it. I can choose to cherry pick the bits that I think might make the difference for me. I can choose to avoid the bits that are difficult, but ultimately are the gold mine. You know, I've got to chip away at those. So I'm very, very, very much a work in progress. I can't talk much more about that, other than I guess one of the things what I can tell you is it's easier. The whole thing is easier with God, and that could be the God of your understanding. You know, that's nothing to do with me, but I've chosen a path of Christianity, and again, that's just a personal choice. This stuff is so much easier when I'm not trying to do it on my own, when I've got an understanding and a faith in that power that is much greater than me, that can rescue me in when I'm down, that can lift me and build me. That's not to ignore the physical personal relationships I have with people, but that's the one that makes it all possible for me. That's because people piss me off. I'm still not very good at relationships, and I'm not frightened. It doesn't seem overwhelming, and all simply because I've got that relationship with God, which I consider completely vital. Spiritual program. I don't think you can participate in a spiritual program without having a spiritual experience. So just to recap, I'm not knocking primary purpose. I think it's phenomenal, and I still take people through that way because I do believe that God puts us with who we can be of use to. And the fact is, I can't give away something I haven't got. And I can only give it away the way it was given to me. Can't reinvent this stuff.
Thanks for that, Fox. Yeah, really helped me. Just touching what you said about like children, really, because I don't know, when I come out and like making amends with the adults, it's quite easy in a sense. I suppose they understand more. Whereas, I mean, my daughter's 6 now, Alfie's 12. So Molly doesn't really remember much, but Alfie's been through a lot. And when I come out, I was like, well, let's go here, let's go there. Do you want this? Do you want that? And it made me realise that that doesn't fix it. You know, what he wants is his mum. And as much as, you know, when I was away in rehab, it's like, oh, you know, as if he didn't like me very much. But he does. He's a mummy's boy. And I've come back and, you know, he comes to me now and gives me hugs. And I sit and I do his homework with him. And I was sitting with Molly the other day and like doing normal stuff, you know, just like her homework and all the homeschooling. And it's just beautiful, you know, it's just such a lovely thing to be able to do, because before I found all of that irritating when I was in addiction. I didn't have time for that. I didn't want to do that. So yeah, it's just a special feeling being able to give that to my children now. And I know that they love it, and I just, I just want to follow the program and just keep it up, because I never want to go back to that. I don't want to let them down ever again. Because I know they love having their mum back. I love being back. So, and I suppose my parents are different. I mean, money-wise, they've sort of spent a lot out on me. And even when I was in rehab, like looking after the children and that, I don't have money to give them back. But I know that me just trying hard and trying to better myself now is all they want for me. So, you know, that I'm back in their lives and that I'm a better person. And I know that's what they want. So, I'm going to keep on doing it, but I really enjoyed your talk. I found it really helpful, so thank you.
yeah, thanks for that talk, Fox fan. I agreed. Like you said, the commitment is ringing in your head right now, and like it's ringing in mine as well. Like, you know, about loads of things where I start doing stuff and then I fall short, and then my head always goes, bring it back to basics. But it should always be at basics. It should always be there. Anything beyond that is my own crazy harebrained plan that I've concocted, and it's not basic anymore. It's like really complicated, and I'm understanding the value of putting things on paper again. Most definitely, like I'm just really trying to get stuck in with it. These groups are fantastic. It's made me consider a lot more than what I'd usually do. And like you were saying about Amends with Family, and one thing I found helpful when I'm doing amends has been like asking people where am I falling short, because the stuff that I won't see or can't see is the things that I need to work on. Do you know what I mean? That's exactly what I need to work on, and I need that, you know, because they're out of the situation. They're the voice of God, if that's your lingo, and they remove myself from the situation, you know, like it's difficult when your parents won't accept an amends. Like, say I've rinsed my mum and dad financially, rinsed them, and then like they struggle to take the money off me. Do you know what I mean? I want to give them some money, but it's a push for me to do it. So like I'll do stuff and like they took me out for meals and I'll just pay for the meal, or you know, things like that. Or like I'll say, Dad, put that in a savings account, because that's all he doesn't really want my money. He just wants me to save it. Do you know what I mean? So I can do that. I can do that, and then you know, I'll get him something nice still. But yeah, that's it really. Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah.
Thanks for that, Fox. I only met you very briefly when I came down to ECR earlier this year, so it was really nice to hear a little bit about yourself to get a better understanding. You know, and a lot of people are very fortunate on this today that they know you a lot better than I do, so thanks. I did my stuff at ECR and I came out and I did my 4 and 5 really thoroughly with Sonia, to be fair. I didn't really get 6, 7, and I never got round to my amends, which I'm actually really grateful I didn't, because now I've gone back through it with my sponsor after doing the steps, you know, with a better understanding of what I'm doing and actually doing step 3 properly. You know, my steps, I still didn't get step 3 when I look back at it now in ECR at all. God wasn't there in my understanding at all. It was my dad, it was signs on the wall, you know, it just wasn't there. And now this time I finally think I'm getting it. I wouldn't like to say I've got it, because I don't think you ever do, but enough that I trust, you know, I make my prayers and I trust that those things are going to happen. So I'm doing my amends with my mum today, which I'm, you know what, I'm not fearful about it, because my primary purpose is to just, what do I want to do with her today? I wanted to realise that she wasn't a bad mum, because she thinks she was. She thinks that's why I'm an alcoholic. Do you know what I mean? I want to come out of this today. I want her to realise she just wasn't a bad mum at all, because she wasn't, you know? And I've been a bad mum, so I know what that feels like. But the bit I really like today, you know, like when you did that bit where you went back to the beginning, you put it into sections. My girls are 20, well, one of them is 29 today, the other one's 28 in a fortnight. And I think what I probably will do, I'll ask my sponsor, obviously, is I probably need to look at chunks of my alcoholism with them. You know, the early days of what I did, because it got worse as they got older. And I don't know what they remember. I don't know what their thoughts are on anything. So I need to put that into bite-sized chunks and look at what I did as a mum and what I did when they were kids and what I did when they were at school. You said, I mean, I never turned up to school. because I didn't want them to see me that I'd had a drink, rather than, you know what I mean? When you said that, that was like, oh my God, why didn't I ever pick them up from school? I know, right? Oh, that's not nice. You know, I wasn't there for them to pick them up from school. When the teacher rang me up and said, oh, they're not well, can they get on the bus? Or don't worry, the au pair will come and pick them up. And actually, that was because I was at work. It wasn't because I was in the pub getting pissed, you know, but I was still focusing on something else other than my kids. So I think what I got from that today is, I say, I'll check it through with my sponsor, but being the age they are, it's important for me to look at, I think, different chunks of my behaviour with them as they've grown up, because they've grown up into really good, balanced, solid girls. Thankfully, other people were around in their life to give them the support and that I didn't, like my sister and their dad and whatever, which I'm now very grateful for, that I was incredibly jealous about. So yeah, thanks. I really got loads from that, Fox. It was really, really nice. And nice to get to know you.